It's Tuesday, September 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President Obama is on the offensive against climate change.
The Haqqani network is partly responsible, perhaps even more than partly responsible, for some terrorist incidents recently in Afghanistan.
The U.S. asks Pakistan to help stop militant attacks against its neighbor. Also ahead, U.S. politics shift again. A musical collaborator goes solo. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. National Security Advisor Susan Rice has urged Pakistani leaders to boost efforts to stop militants from using Pakistani territory to launch attacks in Afghanistan and ease tensions with longtime South Asian rival India over the dispute in Kashmir. Rice's two-day visit to Islamabad was highlighted by her meeting with Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. The meeting came amid growing U.S. concerns the Islamist insurgent group Haqqani Network, believed to have ties with Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, is responsible for recent violent attacks in the Afghan capital, Kabul. Christopher Sneddon, a South Asia analyst at the Hawaii-based Asia Pacific Center for Security Studies, explained to VOA's Victor Beatty the nature of the terrorist threat to Afghanistan.
The threat is the Haqqani network, which they believe, they being certainly the Afghans and probably the US as well, that the Haqqani network is partly responsible, perhaps even more than partly responsible, for some terrorist incidents recently in Afghanistan, particularly Kabul, and also that the Pakistan military hasn't actually degraded their capabilities as a result of their military operations in the northwest of Pakistan.
Now, the Reuters news agency says that the Haqqani network has been described as a, quote, veritable arm of the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, which is Pakistan's military spy or intelligence gathering agency. How accurate is that?
I think that has a degree of truth. It's very hard to know because by the nature of the ISI and how it operates, the Inter-Services Intelligence Directorate, it doesn't say very much publicly. They do have a spokesman, but he's not going to tell us that the Haqqani network is under their control. But certainly over the years, it has looked like they have been given support, training, intelligence assistance by ISI and perhaps even shelter. Now, the new general in charge of the Pakistan Army, General Sharif, has said that we are no longer discriminating between good and bad Taliban. And they have mounted this operation in Waziristan, both north and south, particularly the north, where the Haqqani network may have gained or had previously had sanctuary. The aspect of that operation is that there's no, or very few, if any, press in there to verify what's happened or not happened. And, of course, some people perhaps were made aware of these operations taking place and were given the opportunity to get out before they took place. So it's uncertain how degraded the Haqqani network has been as a result of this operation. And clearly, I think, anyway, perhaps not so clearly, the U.S. thinks that there's a long way to go.
Ms. Rice also urged Pakistan to end tensions with India, who canceled planned peace talks last week and 9 people killed during the exchange of fire along the disputed Kashmir border. How concerning is the crisis between those two countries?
It is concerning, and there's a report in one of the major Pakistan dailies today saying that the defense minister has said that if India imposes a war on us, they will get more than a befitting response. They will regret it for decades. So when you start to hear defense ministers contemplating war, yes, some of it is rhetoric, but clearly there is concern. And not only concern for me as an international relations person, but I think there's people in India and Pakistan now concerned as well that the rhetoric has been upped a bit and the relationship is very poor. Now, it's not all Pakistan's doing, I have to say, either. India is finding it very difficult to engage with Pakistan as well at the moment.
During her visit, Ms. Rice also invited Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif to visit Washington on October 22nd. While we put that on our calendar, it's time to turn to International Edition's social media segment. And as always, our G. Abby Lee is here in Studio 22 to tell us what's trending on the web. Hi, G. Did Ambassador Rice tweet about her trip?
Hi, Jim. Absolutely. Her first tweet about the trip came yesterday when she tweeted this. In Islamabad today, discuss how to deepen cooperation to tackle shared priorities. Encourage Pakistan to advance regional peace and stability. That's been retweeted and marked as a favorite nearly 300 times, respectively. She sent out a few more tweets since then, including a photo with local civil society activists. She also tweeted about the White House invitation to Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, like you mentioned earlier in the show. She's on Twitter at Ambassador Rice.
Well, obviously that meeting with Prime Minister Sharif was the highlight of her trip,
Absolutely. We'd say.
What else about the trip are people talking about?
Well, for that, let's turn to our website at voanews.com. We have an article titled, Rice Meets with Sharif in Islamabad, and that's getting a lot of attention from around the world.
And they are about what?
Mostly about the relationship between Pakistan and India and the role they play in global security. They also have to do with Washington's ties with both countries. So here's an example. A reader named Kay Singh from Mauritius argued, the whole world, including the USA, knows that Pakistan is a source of terrorism. He or she added, it's beyond belief that although many of the wanted terrorists in the world have found safe haven in Pakistan, the country is still in good books of Washington. That's arguable, but that's what she wrote. Mm-hmm. And another reader named Yaba from the US wrote this comment. Ms. Rice goes to Pakistan, and in other news, U.S. plans to sell about 50 more choppers to Pakistan that will get used against India. Why can't Pakistan be declared a terrorist state? Jim, I have to say, more comments were negative toward Islamabad than they were about New Delhi. And that's all for me today.
All right. Thank you very much for monitoring that.
Thanks for having me.
G. Abby Lee in our studio, and she's on Twitter as well. You can follow her each and every day at G. Abby Lee. Of course, International Edition, also on Twitter. It's VOA underscore IE. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. The Obama administration says scientists are overwhelmingly unified in concluding that humans are contributing to global climate change. Secretary of State John Kerry said on Sunday that skeptics who stand in the way of action to respond to climate change will not be remembered kindly. Kerry and President Obama are in Alaska at this hour, and they were there to address the State Department's conference on global leadership in the Arctic. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins has been following the conference. She joins us to talk more about it. Pam, what is the administration's goal through this gathering?
The State Department and the Obama administration has joined delegations from about 20 countries who are meeting in Alaska to look at ways to address climate change and its effects on the Arctic. One speaker today outlined problems that include increased temperatures in the Arctic, shrinking sea ice, and a greater risk of wildfires. Already, the representatives from the participating countries, which include France, Germany, Singapore, and also the European Union, have signed a joint statement on climate change and the Arctic, and in it they reaffirm a commitment to take urgent action to slow what they say is the pace of global warming in the region. In his remarks, Secretary of State Kerry called climate change a seismic challenge. He said that the global community would have to come together to address it.
Secretary of State Kerry, of course, was in China recently to negotiate a carbon reductions pact with that country, and he's been an advocate strongly for international carbon-reducing emissions, and obviously the president in Alaska. And he also renamed a mountain.
Yes, he did. President Obama has decided to rename Mount McKinley, the tallest mountain in Alaska, Denali. The peak received the name Mount McKinley in the late 1800s as a tribute to the former president, but Native Alaskans have always called the mountain Denali. House Speaker John Boehner said he was deeply disappointed by the president's decision to rename the mountain. He said the name Mount McKinley served as a testament to the legacy of the former president.
Amid that controversy, there has been quite a bit of controversy on climate change. The administration says all you have to do is go to Alaska to see what is happening. There have been others who say, well, maybe not.
Absolutely. A lot of what is taking place in Alaska also is a lead up to a United Nations climate change summit that takes place later this year in Paris. And that one will have a broader scope, not just looking at the impact of climate change on the Arctic region, but looking at it from a global perspective.
Well, whether at the summit of Mount Denali or a summit on climate change, Pam Dawkins is always on top of it. Thank you so much, Pam, for following this and being with us today.
You're welcome.
Well, the political climate certainly changes quite a bit here in the United States, as presidential candidates still have 5 months to wait for their first real test from voters in the Iowa caucus. But robust campaigning is going on there right now as Republicans try to make their voices heard amid a crowded field seeking that party's nomination. Senior political correspondent Jim Malone is with me to discuss Donald Trump and Ben Carson, both those men currently tied in the polls in Iowa. Jim, let's first start with the significance of the Iowa caucus. Why does it matter?
Iowa will kick off the whole process February 1st of 2016. It'll be the Iowa Party precinct caucuses for both Democrats and Republicans. And Iowa has the traditional first state role of opening up the process. That's why there's so much focus now on how people are doing in Iowa. The candidates generally want to get a good starting gate victory if they can, or at least a high finish in places like Iowa and then following in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm. How representative is Iowa of the United States as a whole?
Not very demographically representative in terms of ethnicity and race and so forth. Mm-hmm. It's primarily white. But, you know, for both parties, they do put a lot of effort into the vote count in Iowa. And right now, the latest poll conducted by Monmouth University shows that Donald Trump and Ben Carson, two sort of political newcomers, are tied at 23% among Republican-leaning voters in Iowa. Significantly, the third-place finisher is Carly Fiorina, also a political neophyte. So what's interesting is right now people seem to be looking for, especially on the Republican side, political outsiders. Trump certainly fits that. Whether he can hold on is anyone's guess, but right now, the Donald Trump train doesn't show any signs of slowing down.
It's been quite an interesting campaign to watch so far, and very entertaining, too. A lot of people say, well, there doesn't seem to be much substance. He hasn't really answered a lot of hard questions, but people seem to resonate with what he's saying.
You know, there's another Quinnipiac survey that came out today about sort of voter attitudes around the country that found that 71% of American voters right now are dissatisfied with the way things are going in the country, including 41% who are very dissatisfied. That gives some insight, perhaps, into why Trump has sustained this momentum. There is a group that's very angry and frustrated, and it's kind of like they're venting through him. Mm-hmm. And they like the fact he's very blunt-spoken and that he's not really moderating his language very much, even when he comes under attack.
It's fascinating with Dr. Ben Carson, because here you have a neurosurgeon who's been at Johns Hopkins University for a long time in Baltimore. And that now seems to be resonating with voters without any political background.
Completely different style than Donald Trump. But, you know, he's the only African-American in the race in either party. And he seems to be resonating, again, with voters looking for something different, something beyond the the sort of pat talking points we get from so many of the politicians. Those folks have sort of dropped down in the ranking of voters in places like Iowa. Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, has slipped considerably. There just seems to be a yearning right now among Republicans for somebody or something different, and it's being sustained for the foreseeable future. Again, I think a lot of Trump's rivals keep waiting for him to kind of blow up somehow, that he's going to self-destruct. But there's no sign of that happening anytime soon. If anything, his favorable, unfavorable poll numbers have actually switched around now in Iowa. He was very, you know, viewed unfavorably by a lot of people just a few months ago. But he's been able to turn that around. So in one sense, we don't know what the ceiling is for Donald Trump right now.
Two very contrasting styles and two identical numbers in the polls right now. That should spell for a fascinating time in Iowa.
It's really got a long way to sort out. The next debate is in the middle of September. We'll know more then. Perhaps. Maybe we won't. It's a wide open field with a huge field and no end in sight.
Our full support goes behind Jim Malone, who follows politics for us. Thank you so much, Jim.
You bet. Thank you.
And our vote is with you because you're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Singer Ruby Amanfu is known for her collaborations with other artists, including Patti LaBelle, Kelly Clarkson, and White Stripes guitar singer, singer-guitarist, whichever way you like, Jack White. But now she's going it alone. International Edition's David Byrd looks at the singer who covers Bob Dylan, Kanye West, and others on her new solo CD, Standing Still.
Ruby Amanfu's father moved their family from Ghana to Nashville, Tennessee, when she was only three. She showed talent as early as third grade when she won a pack of gumballs for singing in a school talent show. Nashville is where music critics began to notice her talent a decade or so later. It's also where she met fellow musician Sam Brooker. The two became Sam and Ruby and went on to complete a selection of songs that became their first EP. The Associated Press called their 2009 album, The Here and the Now, the best album of the year.
I'm walking away from my past prime. The here and the now's what we'll make right if we get to see the more.
Now Ruby Amanfu has a new CD, Standing Still, which covers several top names, including Bob Dylan and Kanye West. She chose their more obscure tunes so that people could hear her instead of the original recordings.
And I wanted this to feel like a discovery for the listener. Even if they do know the artist, they may not know the song, and I want them to also feel a discovery listening to me for the first time, because these songs are really personal to me, and I want to share my personal story in those songs.
The album was recorded in 5 days in a rural Tennessee log cabin. Ruby says that the beauty of making the album that way with producer Mark Howard, a six-piece band, and guest producers, including the Black Keys' Patrick Carney, is that it felt very organic.
You can wake up in the morning and record, and then you can have lunch and record, and then have dinner and record, and maybe have a glass of wine and do something else if you're in the mood. So, you know, instead of having a normal session where you come in and you're on the clock and, you know, you get one or two down, it was a really great way to do it. And that's why we got so much material, is because everyone was just in the same space and really relaxed.
Ruby Amanfu is known for her high-profile collaborations with other artists. She hopes that her fans can hear all she has learned from others in her solo CD.
I'm excited for the support that I already have from the fans who have been with me in those other forms, and I hope that they are proud of what I have to give now, because I feel that learning so much from all of those partnerships has only made me stronger as an individual artist.
Ruby Amanfu's new album, Standing Still, is out this month. I'm David Byrd.
Down, down, how I long to be a shadow on the wall. I would make no sound at all. And when the sun goes, shadow on the wall, it cannot be seen at all.
You've been listening to International Edition. We're always on the web at our website, voanews.com. Find us on Facebook. VOA Asia is the place to go. We like to see you visit, and we hope you like us while you're there. On Twitter, VOA_IE is the handle you want to follow for all the updates around the clock. You can email us as well. Tell us what's on your mind, voaasia@voanews.com. We always like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zeynep Abdel-Rahman, and of course you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
August 29th marked the four-year anniversary of the detention in Iran of U.S. citizen Amir Hekmati on false charges of espionage. Mr. Hekmati, a former U.S. Marine who was born in Arizona, was arrested by Iranian authorities when he traveled to Iran in 2011 to visit relatives. In a statement, Secretary of State John Kerry again called on the government of Iran to release Amir Hekmati on humanitarian grounds. "This is a milestone no family wants to mark," he said. "The Hekmati family has shown inspiring perseverance in the face of this injustice. And as befits a former Marine, Amir has shown tremendous courage in the face of this unjust detention." Secretary Kerry noted that President Barack Obama recently told a group of American veterans that he would not relent in efforts to bring Mr. Hekmati home. In that speech, Mr. Obama spoke of all the Americans who are unjustly detained in Iran.
Journalist Jason Rezaian should be released. Pastor Saeed Abedini should be released. Amir Hekmati, a former sergeant in the U.S. Marine Corps, should be released. Iran needs to help us find Robert Levinson. These Americans need to be back home with their families.
Secretary of State Kerry also called on the government of Iran to release Saeed Abedini and Jason Rezaian, as well as Mr. Hekmati, and to work cooperatively with the United States to locate Robert Levinson so that all can be returned to their families.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.